Welcome to Be Simply. This is she, and I want to thank you for joining us in this moment. Today, we're going to connect with Jenny Brandon, and she is a musician, a writer, a composer, a conductor, and a yogini. She's going to share her wisdom and her beauty. Without further ado, let's dive in with Jenny. Jenny, I want to thank you for being here today. I really appreciate you coming to see me in person. It's always fun. I want to dive into, well, all aspects of you, but first to talk to you about music and being a composer, classically trained, and what that means, being that we're in the age of pop culture where people take sound bites and mix them and auto-tune. It's a very different discipline. Yes. And outcomes. So if you can just share with the listeners a little bit about your background and your passion for it, and then we'll dive in from there.
Sure. I'm so glad to be here sitting face to face with you. So, yeah, as a composer, you know, when I was a kid, I started taking piano lessons when I was about 5 years old. And that really was sort of the path for me as far as for discipline and just starting to learn music and just realizing how much I loved it. And so as a background as a pianist, going through that, I think it was a natural step for me to move into writing music, because as I went along, you know, doing vocal stuff and singing, I started putting all of that together. And so my first world of writing was actually as a singer-songwriter and doing a lot of vocal music, a lot of sitting at the piano playing hours at a time. And I was joking, we were in the 90s, you know, when I was in junior high and high school. It was very, like, teenage angst kind of period, so it was appropriate to be a singer-songwriter then. But yeah, I mean, I think what I, you know, as I grew as a composer, you know, I went from the world of sort of that pop culture singer-songwriter era and realized that I wanted to dig a little deeper into music. And so when I got to college, you know, really focused on being a classical, we kind of say classical contemporary composer. I mean, new music, different schools of thought of how to call that. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed digging into the depths of not only what the instruments could do, but what you could do with music. And I think definitely my background as a singer and as a pianist have influenced everything that I do, because so much of what I'm writing is very lyrical and melodic, and I know it comes from years and years of singing, years and years of playing the piano, to develop sort of into this style. And the years of the pop music, you know, doing singer-songwriter stuff, definitely influenced that, because I love a good melody. It's inevitable.
Don't we all?
Don't we all? So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely, you know, as a composer, you know, I sort of went that route of the classical world, but then kept sort of being drawn back to the world where I started, which was very much, you know, writing, singing, you know, playing my own stuff. And even though, like, today I don't necessarily do so much singer-songwriter stuff anymore, I feel like it definitely influences what I'm doing. But I think I'm a little old school, too, because I do like to sit down with paper and pencil and sit at my piano and play away for hours and hours at a time. And that was part of my discipline growing up, as a kid, you know, spending hours practicing the piano, spending hours playing and singing. And it became the thing that I loved the most to do. So that's a big part of, I think, who I am. And I think they're sort of weaved together. And it's just become the continuation of that. Of course, as I've, you know, grown as a composer and challenge myself to look at different styles and different ways to write, I think that background will always be solid.
Right.
And I mean, it's the core, I think, of where I've come from.
Beautiful. So knowing that you just came off a pretty big deadline.
Yes.
Five compositions?
Yeah, a couple pieces.
And can you share with the listener a little bit about if they are passionate about developing a focus within music or the arts, how important it is to always continue to refine and cultivate your skills, and how that's been an asset to you in your career?
Sure. I mean, to preface all of this, I think the most important thing that I've learned over the years is working with other people and collaboratively. And that helped build the discipline, I think, for my continued writing, because working with people who are really passionate about playing music, performing music, who want to do new music, and then you write and you work with them on a piece, and they're really excited about doing it, and you see this great result, and you see something that's successful, and that people enjoy listening to, and that people enjoy playing and performing. And so it's a lot of influence of, I think, other people inspiring me to continue to work really hard at what I'm doing so that I continue to have the best product that I can give to them to perform. And then, I mean, as far as the discipline goes, it's, you know, it's critical, I think, not just to be able to sit down and have, let's say, you know, designated times to write, places in your life that work in your day, you know, in your schedule to write, but to, you know, really focus in growing yourself, not just from your internal source, your internal self, as you're writing, but to continue to reach out and to look at other people's stuff. And so with that, you know, the discipline comes from, you know, maybe if you're just learning to play the piano, practice your scales. It may not be super glamorous, but it's necessary to do that kind of thing. And I mean, the same thing with composition for me. It's not just about sitting down and writing the music, but it's about interacting with the people that are actually going to do the music, perform the music, listen to the music, and then, you know, coming back with those ideas and saying, okay, that's inspired me, you know, chunk out my time that I'm going to work on this stuff, and, you know, really to churn out a product that's something I'm proud of and that's something that people really will love, you know.
And that art of collaboration, from my own interaction in the field of arts and creation, oftentimes there's that word ego involved.
Yes.
because there's a sense of ownership on a certain level because you're shaping the clay. Mm-hmm. How can you share that you've learned to do that dance of being engaged with your touch or your specialty within that, but also honoring those that you're playing with?
Yes. That's many years of that dance, figuring that out. Carefully, you know, there was a point, you know, and I would say, you know, I've been writing music for a while now. There was a point where, you know, you spend a lot of time comparing yourself to other people, comparing yourself to other people's careers and kind of looking at that, and that's the ego, right, that gets in the way there a little bit. But what I've learned about that is that it's a little bit of that idea of non-attachment to the outcome. I mean, yes, you hope you do something that people love and you hope that people enjoy it, but not everybody's going to. Not everybody's going to think it's great. Some people are going to go, eh, whatever, that was fine. But I think for me, sort of knowing that I'm going to put something out in the world and to let it have its own voice, even though it's my voice that I'm putting out there, what I've learned over the years with working with performers too in this collaborative process is that you kind of have to let some of the control go. I mean, honestly, I can put as much as I can on paper, and I can give it to them, and every interpretation is going to be slightly different. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the beauty of it, and I think you have to allow yourself to turn over to that process, that it's going to be a little different every single time, and that's awesome. I mean, that's so great to not be attached to, like, it has to be exactly the same thing every single time, because how boring would that be if it was the same thing? But yeah, I mean, it took me a long time to really let that go and to know that, yes, I can prepare things and be professional with it and make it as clear as humanly possible as I can, but then to let it go, to really kind of let it go and let it be what it's going to be, because it takes on a life of its own. And I've learned that a lot from the collaborative process too, because you give something to somebody and they say, yeah, well, I'm going to interpret it this way, and then that'll influence maybe how I write my next piece or how I rework the piece that I'm working on, you know, as I show them edits. So it's a careful dance.
Absolutely. And if you share the value of listening in those moments when you're in collaboration and in everyday life, how that has fed your process.
Yeah, I mean, listening is such a huge part. I mean, you know, of hearing what people are saying, and then also letting go of being offended by things. That's a real challenge, and I think that's anybody that is in any sort of arts or, you know, something where they're putting themselves out there freely and saying, okay, this is me, and what do you think about it? And boy, people can be unkind, you know. And so, yeah, it's hard to let that kind of stuff go, but it's really important, I think, to do it for the sake of sanity and for the sake of just not losing yourself in that, because each thing that we create and let go, there's something else that's going to follow that. There will be. It's just we can't stay attached. I think we can't stay attached to it. You got to move on.
Absolutely.
You just got to move on.
So can you share the being, you know, mm-hmm. not offended, the value of typically in most art disciplines, there's what's known as a critique.
Right.
A period where you put it all out on the line and then you let people actually typically pick it apart.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you can share the value that you've learned of that process and how that can enrich the outcome of what you produce, knowing that maybe you felt it was final, but if you have
sure.
potentially the courage to keep massaging the clay.
Exactly. And that, you know, that comes back to sort of that collaborative process with performers. I mean, it's scary to hand off a piece of work to a performer and know, and specifically ask them, and I do this with every project now, I will hand a draft or something, you know, to them and say, I need you to look at this and I want you to give me your honest feedback. And it's sometimes hard to convince people to give you honest feedback because they're afraid they're going to offend you, but I've learned that if I really listen, if I just let my mind be open, my brain be open to it, and I just really hear what they're saying, that I've learned how to write so much better for instruments that I've never played before, mm-hmm. because I'm talking to someone who's an expert on this, and they're sharing with me their wisdom on it. And so rather than immediately jumping and saying, oh my gosh, you hate this, you hate it, saying, oh, that's great, okay, so this phrase doesn't work because the instrument, you know, doesn't like to play it. You know, it's hard to figure this out on the oboe like this or whatever. I cannot stress enough how valuable that process has been for me, and which is why I look at every project that I work with people as a collaborative project, because it's so important to listen to what they have to say. And that has influenced what I write. It's made me better at writing for the instruments, and it's made me you know, go back and kind of take the hard look at things, especially sometimes you're on a deadline and you're like, oh, well, just get this done, push it out the door. And you realize maybe you're a little lazy on some of the notations, and then a performer kind of calls you on it, and you say, oh, you know what, you're absolutely right. And so you learn the next time, you know, take those extra few steps,
yeah,
listen, and be willing to, just be willing to be open. Yeah.
Good. So if you'll share then, now that we've been talking kind of big picture mm-hmm. about creating, a little bit about your recent work, and
sure.
what you're most passionate about with the outcome, if you're there yet.
Yeah. And what's funny, you know, I'm talking about letting go of, you know, the outcome, and then I'm sitting on the cusp of, like, a bunch of premieres, and there's that little flutter in my heart and my belly that says, but what if they don't like it? And so, you know, one project that I'm working on right now that I just finished off is a piano concerto for choir and chamber orchestra for a group in Long Beach, mm-hmm. from Long Beach Camerata Singers. And, you know, it's such a cool project because I'm working with my friend Tim Durkovic, who's going to be the pianist, mm-hmm. my friend Rob Eistad, who's the director of the group, you know, and it's been this big, long process, and a big piece, like a big 25-minute work, you know, mm-hmm. with text that I had commissioned by my friend Oliver Mayer, who's at USC. And so it's been so much fun to sit in my room and write the piece and work with this text, this beautiful text, and work with Tim on the piano part, you know, and now, you know, I've created this thing and I have to let it go. Now, will there be things maybe in the score that need to be taken care of or fixed? Maybe, sure, after the premiere, you know, I've had those things that got left out of the score inadvertently, but, you know, it is definitely a little bit of like standing on the edge of a cliff and looking over it and saying, okay, this could go either way. I hope they love it. I hope the performers love it. I hope the audience loves it, but I really have to allow myself to step back and say, you know what, I'm excited about it. I feel great about the piece. I feel like it speaks to the text. It speaks to what the project was all about. And, I just have to know going into it that I've given it 110%. Mm. And then allow the performers, Rob and Tim and singers, to bring it to life. And that's exciting. Actually, that part's really exciting. When it finally gets out of my own head and real people do it. and it all comes together, you know, and that's always exciting. But it is. It's a little like standing at the edge of a cliff wondering. The wind could blow either way. It could push you over. You could be just fine. So, yeah. So that's one of the big projects I've been working on.
Good. And what is your passion within composition currently, and what do you hope to work on more of?
You know, I love, and this is the background, I think, as a singer, I love writing vocal music, and so I've been writing this choral piece. I wrote two other women's choir pieces this summer, and I'm looking at another choral piece here pretty soon that I'm going to be writing. I think I love working with the voice, and I think one of the things as a choral singer, background as a choral singer and a choral conductor, I really do believe that, you know, bringing people together to sing is so powerful. I mean, just bringing voices together to do this, and it elicits emotions and on all of this exciting level. And I really love that. And I feel very strongly about writing for voice. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's something I feel very passionate about as far as writing vocally. And then in this last year, I've really discovered the magic of text. Not that I didn't understand it before, but I had projects, this big piano concerto, and then also another piece that I wrote for flute, orchestra, and choir. Mm. And so I had my same friend Oliver Mayer write text for it. And so really working with the text and not just getting the text and choosing text, which can be very exciting, but to work with somebody as they're writing the text. Mm. I mean, words are so powerful. So I think I'm looking forward to more writing of vocal music, whether it's choral or solo or, you know, something like that. And that comes also, I think, from the singer-songwriter in me, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I need you busking at a lounge or something.
Exactly. You know, I love it. I love it. Do a little, like, smoky, torch song kind
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly. You can see it.
Yeah.
With a collaboration that we talked about in the behind the scenes, and then when working in collaboration with choir.
Yeah.
Just to educate the listeners a little bit about what goes into having orchestra and choir and all these facets that maybe people don't pick up on or even have a level of respect to know, wow, I should savor this.
Right. I mean, I think the one thing is, like, if you go and you're listening to, let's say, a piece for choir and orchestra, I mean, really notice how the composer works to allow the voices to be heard. Right? I mean, we sort of take for granted, oh, you know, I'm listening to this and I can hear the voices and they're singing these words and that's beautiful, it's great. But there's a lot of crafting that goes on behind that to make sure that, you know, unless the composer wants the voices to mix in with the orchestra, that they're forefront and that there's definite working behind the scenes to make sure that the orchestra doesn't cover up the text, because the voices are, I won't say they're delicate, but, you know, to hear the words, you don't want to cover them. So, yeah, like if you go to an orchestral choral concert, you know, really pay attention to how the orchestra hangs out behind the choir, or when they all come together and they create this huge, big moment, you know, what is going on? You know, how is the composer layering all of this? And it really is like pieces of a puzzle, I think, coming together. There are lot of pieces, all the instruments, all the voices, the conductor, the performers, you know, but when you hear a really great performance of a really great piece, just know that, I mean, wow, you know, there's some behind the scenes work going on there that you'll never even realize that the composer sat for maybe years in a room working on that.
Absolutely. And as you're sharing that, if you, you know, witnessing performances myself, the presence that's required, mm-hmm. especially when you're an orchestra, even if you have an amazing conductor, if you allow the mind to drift, mm-hmm. you could potentially throw a big cog in the wheel.
Yes.
So if you can share how important that practice, being that you're a yogi,
sure.
A yogi instructor of being present and mindful and very attentive.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to be, I think, you have to be 100% present in that, because when you're not, I mean, just speaking from a perspective of as a performer, being in, you know, big performances and, you know, you don't want to be the person that sings on the wrong entrance, you know, and you really do need to be present and allow yourself just to be in this experience and in this moment, because once it's over, it's over. I mean, that's kind of the magic of live performance, is that when it's done, it's done. I mean, yes, and it kind of goes back to my idea of each performance is a little different, each thing is a little bit, you know, special, and when it's over, so if you can stay right there, and really create that magic, that will never ever happen again, just in that particular way. That's powerful. I think it's really great. So, yeah, practice your stuff at home, and make sure you pay attention to your conductor.
And how would you, how do you apply that skill set out, or do you, outside of that environment, and how do you feel like that's been an asset to assist you in being more present and mindful in your everyday life?
Right. I mean, it definitely bleeds over into it. I mean, the discipline that I've learned from performing and from writing, you know, into my regular life to be as present as I can. And I think it's happened more so now over the last couple of years as I've been teaching yoga and really kind of studying the philosophies and the idea of, you know, I'll teach to my class, we'll be present in your practice. You know, what does that mean to be present? And, you know, it really is a matter of working, and I think it's like anything else, you have to work at it, to not allow yourself to be thinking of 17 other things that are going on over here, but just to say, I'm going to shut my phone off, I'm going to shut my email off, you know, I'm going to work for 1 hour on this thing, whether it's your yoga practice, or writing a piece of music, or practicing the piano, whatever you're doing. Yeah, you have to work at it. I mean, the same way that we work at anything. I mean, it really is it's a skill that can become a very natural part of who you are over time, but it doesn't just happen. You can't just think, well, I'm going to be present. Good. We'll keep practicing it. keep working to be present. But it does influence, and I do try to bring that into my regular life, you know, with even, let's say, my husband coming home at night, you know, he teaches yoga, he works full time, we see each other a couple hours, you know, at night, you know, before we go back to sleep, and so I find it's really important to be present in relationships, because it's easy to be checking your phone all the time, or, you know, updating Facebook, or whatever you're doing, you know, you have to work at it. I think that's my biggest thing. Yeah.
Practice, practice, practice.
Practice, practice, practice.
So, we're going to switch gears from the musician, composer, writer to yoga, since you started to bridge there. Can you share a little bit for you what attracted you into wanting to teach yoga and make it a part of your life?
Sure.
And how it has enriched other aspects, even your work,
sure,
relationships.
It was funny, I came into yoga, you know, I had done a couple classes at the, you know, local gym or whatever, was never really that turned on by yoga, and then we moved to Long Beach. I lived in LA for a long time, we moved down to Long Beach, and what started me on the path of yoga, really truly on the path of yoga, was thyroid cancer. Mm-hmm. So I had thyroid cancer, and I sort of said, okay, so there are things out of my control in my life, and what's something that I can kind of bring back into perspective? And I thought, you know what, I'm going to give this yoga thing a try, because I've heard it's good for helping you really focus. And even at that point, I was really working as an independent composer, so I knew the idea of discipline. That was fine, but so starting to get on my mat, had a great teacher, and really turned me on to this idea of being present. And it's not all about, you know, it's not all about this external stuff. Like, we don't need to have the approval of everybody else around us. I mean, we really need to find it from within ourselves and just sit with that. And that was a hard thing for me to learn. Mm. I realized how much I had been sort of go, 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 and really relying on other people's opinions. And so starting to move into a point where my my yoga teacher said, hey, I'm doing this teacher training. You know, if you all are interested, let me know. We'll talk about it. I thought, I could never teach yoga. I mean, I'm not that great at yoga. Here I am, you know, talking to myself about how I'm not great at it. You know, like it's something to be achieved, that I have to be perfect at it. I'm like, oh, I don't know. And then I finally decided, I thought, you know what? Why the heck not? You know, I have been moving on this path, you know, of sort of taking charge of things in my own life for a couple of years, and, you know, why not? So I did the training, and it was really life-changing because it made me realize that there's just so much more to who we are. I mean, you know, we don't need this external stuff to help us be who we are. We are who we are. We just have to kind of dig in there and figure out what that is.
Right.
And so that was a real turn on to me, and also the idea of you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be perfect at everything you do. You don't have to be perfect at anything. You just have to be present in it. And so that to me was such a relief. It felt like such a relief after all these years of, you know, sort of feeling like I had to prove something all the time. And it's the nature of the music business too.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to prove things. But to realize that it's okay to not be attached to that outcome. And so I thought, gosh, what a great thing for I've discovered this for myself, and I really love to give that to other students to let them know, hey, you know what? We're on our mats. It's okay if you can't do handstand. Who cares? You know? I mean, you're here, you're present, and that's just one part of our yoga practice. And I realized how valuable it was, not just in a sense of physical practice, but also in our life practice as well. So that was such a huge eye-opener to me, and getting to teach and just support people in that journey of their own is just really exciting. It's fun. I think it's really fun. And I will say that teaching yoga to me is very much like writing a piece of music. Just to bridge here. I find that when I'm writing a piece of music, there's an arch to a piece, right? You could say simply a beginning, a middle, and an end. The same thing with the yoga sequence or yoga class. There's a beginning, a middle, and end. And there's a climax in the middle, and you come back from that, and, you know, so I feel it's very similar. I mean, I feel like, and that's very much influenced my writing as well, kind of looking at it that way, saying, oh, yeah, it's really, there's a parallel.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And being that I've taken your classes, you're a great instructor, and I appreciate that aspect of your discipline and your presence. Mm-hmm. It's very noticeable compared to... There's a wide variety of articulations of yoga out there in the world right now. If you can share a little bit about your passion to work with prenatal clients and your attentiveness, and this is where sometimes I feel there is a gap where people don't do the due diligence to really take accountability for the student in a room and how important it is. And I witness you being very conscientious. Mm-hmm. So if you can share a little bit with the listeners about your passion with prenatal, but also the responsibility, because there's even more of a responsibility in that moment.
Right. Yeah. I, you know, with the prenatal women, it was a friend of mine who was pregnant, and I was just starting off as a teacher. I think I was still even in my teacher training, my 200-hour, and, you know, I could see, you know, she had some pregnancy discomforts, and I said, you know what? This is part of my goal, is to offer support to people. So I thought, let me try to, you know, help you during your pregnancy. Let's work on some yoga together. We'll do some poses. And I just realized how powerful it was for women that are pregnant, who are going through all these changes in their body, not just, you know, physically, but spiritually, and all of this, I mean, questions and changes happening. And so it was very powerful to see that. And I realized that there really is a need for this additional support, I think, in the prenatal community. And so I decided to go and get additional training for prenatal, because like you said, there's a lot of responsibility when you've got pregnant mamas on their mat. I mean, they're not delicate. I mean, they're going to have babies, but, you know, there are things that we don't want to ask them to do during their pregnancy. And so I just felt really passionate about that and the idea of supporting women. I mean, I love the idea of supporting women and helping them through this big change in their lives, and just to be there to offer a little bit of guidance and just a little bit of actual, like, straight up physical support. Like, you got some back aches, come on in. you know, let's help you find your way into a little bit more comfort. And I like the idea of supporting women's health, mm-hmm. and I'm still kind of exploring that too, like not just with the prenatal women, because I love working with them, and I love mm-hmm. seeing them come to class and, you know, grow strength and be comfortable in, you know, what's going on, you know, and also being part of a community of helping them find other women who are going through the same thing as they're going through. I think it's an incredible thing to be part of their journey on that, mm. and to also to offer them straight up, like, you know, hey, you've got this discomfort, this is possibly what it is, you know, or, you know, check in with yourself on these things. And so it's just neat. It's just so unique. It's mm. such a unique thing, something that I would never thought that I would be doing, because I thought, oh, I'll teach yoga, but this is just such a neat area to watch these women change and grow, and then they come back and bring their babies back in to say hello, and it's so cool mm. just to see this life changing experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. You do it well.
Oh, thank you. I love doing it. I feel blessed to get to do it.
And that aspect of women's health, you mm-hmm. sharing that you had thyroid cancer,
yeah.
and if you can give some words of wisdom to those that might be feeling a little in dis-ease, that's oftentimes when people intersect yoga, mm-hmm. is that things are array emotionally, physically, maybe mentally, all of the above.
Right, right.
And how you found your own inner strength for healing and regeneration.
You know, I think you have to let yourself come over into the process of it. I mean, and just, you know, it's hard when you're in the middle of something and it's scary and you've got people telling you these things and saying you're going to have surgery and then you're going to do this treatment and then, you know, your brain's kind of spinning with all of this stuff. You know, I think if you can just sort of sit in the middle of it and just say, okay, you know what, take a deep breath and kind of explore not only, you know, how you feel about it, but look forward and say, okay, you know, if I can be present through this, you know, what comes after this, you know, be present in what's happening and knowing that sometimes you're going to learn things about yourself that are great, and sometimes you'll say, wow, I didn't expect that about it. But just, I think, to sit in it, just to be in it and be in the present. I always equate it to sort of like imagining yourself sitting in the middle of a room quietly while everything is just swirling in madness around you, because it kind of feels like that when you have a diagnosis or something like that's going on, and just allow yourself to be in it, be present in it. It can be challenging, but I guess find a little quiet in the middle of the storm.
Oh.
yeah, and just, you know, and go explore those things that maybe can support you. Get on your mat, you know, meditate. If you've never meditated before, do it for a couple minutes a day, and just give yourself that peace of mind that, you know, stuff's gonna, it's gonna move forward, you know, and just to be present through it.
Mm. Yeah. Presence. Another presence.
Presence.
Wow.
Exactly. How about that?
In all things.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
And can you share with the listeners if they're inspired to create collaboration in their mm-hmm. life and creating this team approach? I was contemplating this earlier this morning, that, you know, oftentimes we need these teams and these tribes and these posses, whether you're in a prenatal class, becoming a mama for mm-hmm. the first time. It's nice to have a constituency that's supportive of you.
Right.
And how you might inspire others to not be in their little autonomous mm-hmm. shell and start to reach out and branch out for collaboration and support.
Yeah, I mean, like-minded people, gather them around you. You know, and I mean, I think, you know, and if you're really, you know, you're sitting there thinking, okay, well, I've got this thing that I love to do, but how do I find these groups? I mean, we're in a lucky age where we have the internet, and you can go on and look for support systems within your area. I mean, you know, the easiest thing to do is to find those people that are just doing the same thing you're doing and go where they are, you know, and even if that means, you know, showing up at a concert and introducing yourself to a performer, you know, I'm going back as, you know, as a composer, you know, I think about how many great connections I've made over the years and commissions and pieces I've had performed that all started with me walking up to somebody after a concert saying, "Hi, I'm Jenny Brandon. I'm a composer, and that was a great concert. You play beautifully, or you sing beautifully." Mm-hmm. And then really, you just have to put yourself out there, and it's that scary thing again of just being naked in front of everybody and saying, "Here I am." But honestly, if you're just honest with yourself and you can just be present in that, you're going to make incredible connections and incredible collaborations in ways that you never expected to. And I think that's always been my thing that always amazes me every time that another project grows or another friendship blooms. You know, not, I say, again, going back to the whole not being attached to the outcome of it, but knowing that that one person that you're going to reach out to and say, "Hey, I'm this person, I'd love to work with you," turns into this beautiful collaboration that lasts for a lifetime. Mm. So, but yeah, you just got to put yourself out there a little bit. It can be scary, but it can be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. So a lot of serendipitous activity. Yeah. And as you were touching on that, I was flashing back to being in an architectural and design school, locked in a studio, literally, kind of.
Yeah.
As you can probably relate.
Yes.
And I, you know, witness this a lot, because if you don't go through that type of an experience, it's hard for people sometimes, whether they're a business person or a yogi, mm-hmm. to not get into an unhealthy competitive dynamic.
Absolutely.
So if you can share from your experience, mm-hmm. how valuable it is to kind of, you know, like you said, be naked in the sense of, hey, you may be, quote unquote, my competitor, but we have a lot to exchange and learn from each other. And how to potentially be open-minded enough to have that exchange.
Yeah. I mean, it really is a mindset going into it. I mean, for sure. I think you just have to know within yourself that you've got something to offer. Everybody has something to offer, right? And so, you know, if you're sitting there and you think, "Oh, man, you know, I'm writing this music or I'm doing this thing, but this other person's doing it better," well, go learn from them, you know, go introduce yourself, go send them a note, you know, say, "Hey, I really admire what you do. I'd love to talk to you more about this." You know, I mean, that's part of it too. I think if we always have the mindset that we're learning, then we'll never not be learning and we'll never not be open to learning. And so I think that's key. I think that's so important, is to just allow yourself to always be curious too. And ask people how they do it. I've done that in the past with other composers, you know, saying to them, "Well, how do you do this?" Or, you know, what do you do to get all of these commissions? Or what do you do to get your music performed so much? You learn so much from talking to people. And, I mean, a lot of it's just dumb luck. Some things are dumb luck. Some people find themselves in the right place at the right time, and they're a national sensation. Good for them. And, you know, sometimes it just happens to fall in your lap. But, you know, you can, I always think that you don't have to sit around waiting for stuff to come to you. That was something I made a decision a long time ago, that I wasn't going to sit around and wait for opportunities to come to me. You have to get out there and do it. And it can take us out of our shell, but, you know, you just go.
Absolutely.
Just get out there. unlock that door.
Yes.
And I fall victim to that too. You know, when I've been working on these projects this last year and a half, it's been a steady stream of music, and it has been a little nutty. It's been wonderful, but it's been a lot of me in a room writing music and trying to strike a balance, and I'm not always good at it. I mean, I'm the first to admit that. But when you come out of your room and you finally, you know, the sun hits your eyes, you squint a little bit and you realize that there's other people to talk to. It's good, because you want to continue to...
There's a
whole world. And you do want to continue to take in some of that.
Yeah.
You want to take in things, you know. But reach out to people, you know. Reach out to people you admire and respect and ask them. Because most people are pretty open to offering advice or talking to you about how they do it. It's kind of fun. It's fun to talk about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So if you can share with the listeners where we can find you on your website, on SoundCloud, as we talked about.
Sure.
And we'll put the links below, but I think it's important to own it.
Yeah, I'll own it. I'm going to own it. All right, own it and put myself out there. So I've got a website, jennybrandon.com. That's Jenny with an I. And that is about to get a brand new face, so stay tuned for that. That'll have a new look pretty soon. And I've got a SoundCloud page, same thing, Jenny Brandon. I'm on Facebook, Jenny Brandon Music. I think it's Facebook/Jenny Brandon Music. And then what else do I have? I have Twitter. I've got LinkedIn.
We'll put all the links. We'll and is your music on iTunes?
It is. I've got music on iTunes.
Amazon.
You'll find, yeah, iTunes, Amazon, CD Baby. You'll find my CD, Songs of California, Music for Winds and Piano, that I put out a couple years ago, is up on all those places. And I've been really the good fortune through collaborative processes of having a bunch of my music recorded by other performers. Mm. And so there's a bunch of my stuff floating around out there, and you can always come to my website for all that info too.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
You sharing and just doing all that you do.
Thank you for having me. This has been delightful.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Good job. Once again, I want to thank Jenny for being here today. If inspired, please connect to her work below, her music, her website, her social media, and her yoga. We are going to celebrate her by listening to two of her compositions as we exit out. Please take this as an opportunity, as we've discussed, just to sit and be, put everything aside and bring presence to that which you would like to create. We're going to be listening to Spider Sweet and The Giver of Stars. Until next time, this is she signing out with a soft gaze, a full heart, a gentle smile, a deep bow, and a namaste. Be simply. The book.